From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says so everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my producer, my friend, and the backbone of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Hey, Bob, how's it going? And if you were watching right before the show started, On the stream there, the Jet TV stream, you got this beautiful view. And I don't know if you saw it, Bob, the boulevard. It's raining like crazy here.
It is literally raining
buckets.
But look
at the lightning.
I am soaked.
Yes.
From literally my walk from the car to my house to the car and then the car to the studio, I am drenched.
You can see the lightning, too, out there. It's pretty fascinating sight.
It's fascinating.
Yes.
Raining cats and dogs, if you will.
That's what they say there, Bob, raining cats and dogs. But great to be back here, and I like the shirt, by the way.
Oh, thank you. This is a an exclusive Count Panic T-shirt.
Look at that.
That's pretty fancy.
You could sell it on eBay for about maybe $1.50 right now. I don't
something
know.
Like, yeah. Hey, you never know. The crazy collectible world.
Yeah.
Somebody would like
somebody's
that.
Somebody's up for it.
Look, this is never getting sold. This is one of my personal favorites in my collection.
It was a one-time line.
They're in that the Bob After Dark T-shirt line. We're going to relook at that.
Yeah.
Now, Count Panic, usually we'll do the weekend updates, and we're going to do that a little later because we have somebody special to kick off the show. Now, Children of the Night, typically on the show, we try to get as many guests as we can, but because of COVID, it's been a little quiet around here. But because of this beautiful invention called Zoom, we're able to get more people on the show than ever. So we have a lot of guests lined up to kind of break things up a little bit. And speaking of something brand new to the show, we've interviewed animators, Meg, we've interviewed paranormal investigators, filmmakers, fill in the blank, but tonight we have something completely different.
So we do.
This gentleman actually created an RPG, which is a role-playing game.
Yes.
Think of it like Dungeons and Dragons, folks, except kind of different. And the cool thing about this and why it fits into the Bob After Dark mythos is it's a paranormal themed game. So joining us tonight, without further ado, is Anthony the Librarian Domenico. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I happen to recognize your attire there on the show. Is that a Ghostbusters flight suit I see?
It is. I've been joking and saying I think I've done more interviews in this suit than I've done events and job interviews in my regular suit. So,
fun fact, the kind of the essence of Bob After Dark is I'm a Ghostbuster myself. I'm the vice president of the Windy City Ghostbusters.
Did you not notice about him?
I didn't. I had no idea. Do you belong to a franchise, or are you just kind of decked out in that to help promote the game?
A little bit of both. I actually, the creation of the game Gas Bashers was partly because of our local Ghostbusters group.
Where are you from?
I'm living in West Virginia right now.
Oh, so you know the West Virginia Ghostbusters.
I do. And it was members of that group that were harassing me for the last year saying, when are you going to suit up with us?
Tell Dave Humphries you were on Bob After Dark.
I will absolutely do so.
All right. So tell us a little bit, minus Ghostbusters aside, which gets me kind of excited because now I have
do a whole episode.
I have a whole another reason to like it. All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself and we'll dive into your creation here in a minute. But I want to know the person behind the game.
Okay. Well, again, my name is Anthony. I'm usually known on various forums and social media as Librarian NPC. And I have a bit of a reputation of, in the community a little bit with game reviews, so a lot of play testing, and more recently I've been doing some game development. When I'm not doing various harebrained schemes for the tabletop community or working on cosplays and other nonprofit events. I'm usually working in a library of some sort, and thus the name Librarian NPC.
Fair enough. Now, the reason why you're on the show is because sometimes I get a little curious and I go on Kickstarter and I just type in paranormal, or I type in occult, or I type in fill in the blank something spooky, and your game came up automatically. And the second I saw your game, I backed it. And I was like, Count, we need to get this guy on the show, this person that created this game, because the game has so much flavor text and behind it. I was like, I have a feeling we're cut from the same cloth, and we need to get him on the show. So I appreciate you answering the email and getting us on, because I was having trouble finding out how to contact you, and it's really cool that you responded and you're on the show. I appreciate that.
And again, I appreciate you inviting me out here. Sorry about the mix-up with some of the emails. Some people say I'm the easiest person to find online, and others have a difficult time. It's rather entertaining, really.
So what is this thing you created? And we'll talk a little bit more about it, but in essence, what is this thing you've done?
So the game is called Ghast Bashers.
No confusion with the other property.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No confusion at all. Ghast Bashers is a paranormal investigation and hunting role-playing game in which you play a group of intrepid paranormal hunters and begin to track things down and hopefully for fun, profit, and making your community a better place, depending on what type of hunter you are. Inspirations behind the game included series like Ghostbusters, the website SCP, a little bit of Delta Green and Men in Black thrown in just for good measure. And in it, again, characters make these characters, make these hunters, I guess you could say, and go out and see what sort of paranormal hijinks you find, keep your business running, and see what else happens.
Fantastic. I actually have a list of questions from my friends in the role-playing circle I'm in, so shout out to Cerberus and Vex, who were very nice enough to help me out with some questions here. Now, to my normal children of the night, you're going to be scratching your head wondering what a role-playing game is. So before I dive into the questions, Anthony, I'll let you describe. What is a role-playing game to everybody else? Because my fans know me as the paranormal guy, not the gamer. So let's talk about what a role-playing game is.
I usually explain a role-playing game as one part ad-lib acting and one part board game. So I'm sure we've all grown up playing pretend and shooting at each other and then arguing about whether or not you've been hit and you're dead and, you know, things along those lines. So what a role-playing game does is it codifies some of the actions and says, this is what you have to do in order to complete the task you wish to do. But the ad-lib acting comes in from the fact that the situation is portrayed by somebody, in this case, a game master, and they set the stage and you're acting within the confines of that scene. You know, some people like to dress up, you know, hi. Dress up or break out props or do other crazy things like that. Others are just happy with sitting around the table and describing the actions of their characters, interacting with each other. And, of course, the Game Master's part of that group to just create an interesting story, share it with everybody. And the rules are just there to help keep things moving instead of breaking out into arguments.
Fair enough. So I have a list of questions. So my first question to you is, how did you find a good balance of story to mechanics?
That one has actually been a lot of trial and error. And to quote an author I spoke to many years ago, in order to be a good writer, you have to be a good reader. And in my opinion, in order to be a good tabletop designer, you have to read other games, see how they've done it, and then take it one step further. So, for example, in the early stages of my game development, I often ran into the situation where the only games I knew were the World of Darkness line by White Wolf and Dungeons & Dragons. And then as time went on, I started learning more story-based games instead of mechanical-based games. And then from there, it was just a slow development to find that proper balance between storytelling and mechanics. I don't want to say Gas Bashers is that perfect balance, but I'm a little bit closer than where I was a decade ago.
I know you talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but where did you draw the inspiration for the storylines?
So the storylines are definitely going, I have to give credit where credit is due. A couple friends of mine in the local Ghostbusters community have been asking me, when am I going to suit up and join? And of course, hanging around COVID, there's more downtime. So I've been kicking around this game idea while also working on a couple cosplays. The Ghostbusters uniform was one of them. And I was lamenting with my friend Alicia, and I was saying, I'm really frustrated with this because I miss, playing games, I miss running games. I'm still trying to get this one new design to work, and I just can't figure it out. And then she says, "Dude, you're building a proton pack right now, and you're hyped about Ghostbusters Afterlife. Why don't you just make this a Ghostbusters game? Why don't you run Ghostbusters?" And I said, "No, making one is better." And then when I took the game mechanic I've been chewing on for the last year and change in its current iteration, and gave it the setting of Ghostbusters and SCP, all the pieces fell into place. All of the weird things I couldn't get to work now worked because the setting was appropriate. And then that is when I took a look at it, reached out to my artist friends, specifically Malgi Monster and Nightlin, and said, "Hey, I got an idea. Who's in?" And they both immediately volunteered. We had our icon, which we've named Bonk. For those that have not seen it, it is literally a ghost getting hit with a hammer.
It's wonderful.
It is absolutely wonderful. Every time I do any sort of social media posts to update or signal boost Gas Bashers, I'm always getting compliments on the logo. And I can't take full credit for that because I just sent a couple very specific details to Malgi Monster. And then she turned out that logo within a day or two. And to this moment, I'm still in shock about just how amazing that is. But it was thanks to the artists that I took it one and two and then 12 steps further than where I started.
That's wonderful. Do you have any fun stories about your alpha beta process?
Not as many fun ones as I'd like. The situation with Gas Bashers is the mechanics of it started out as a pet project back in my college days. So we're talking, somewhere between 2003 and 2008 is when this project started. And specifically, it was about 2005 I really started to really put nose to the grindstone and actually start making this. And it was such a mess, completely unplayable. I'm talking like, oh, what I have? I think I had something like 9 stats and 30 skills. And then there was an HP, MP, and magic bar. Just, it was a total cluster mess of just one thing on top of another until it was utterly unplayable. But again, I was using what I was familiar with at the time. And then as time went on, I got to try out different versions of, other games, tweak that original set. So I still have all the original files from all those years ago because there's all these bits and pieces that I threw into it that I was able to pull off and use elsewhere. And then Gas Bashers really was just a wait, this is the part that's always worked. Let's just make these couple of changes. Just did the typical analysis, ran it through with a couple friends, just tentative one scene sort of things. So nothing really too crazy in the alpha beta testing because it was literally 15 years in the making.
That's pretty cool. So here's a question that I think only the like anybody that listens to the show that's familiar with gaming. You have a very unique mechanic, and I'll explain to the best of my ability, and Anthony will take over. In most games, it's either a D6. When I say D6, think of a normal dice where it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or like a 20-sided die. That's primarily what you would roll, right? That's how you make your rolls in a game. Anthony does not use that. He uses a D12, which is a 12-sided die, as the system. And everybody I talk to about the game in my gaming circles were like, "Why a D12?" So this is a question on the entire role-playing spectrum's heads right now: is why did you choose a D12 system instead of a D20 or something more popular? And that's not a slide by any means. This is a legit.
Oh, no, I get that. It's I've actually been getting that question often, and one part of it is because it's cool. I really do love the D12, and I think it deserves a lot more affection than it gets. Because in older D&D editions, it was only used for certain swords, and then in the D20 era of 3.0 and 3.5, it was only used for barbarians' hit points, and I think one axe used a D12, so it doesn't get used often, and it's very much unloved. But as I was looking at it, and I said, I know I could do something with this, but what? Well, one of the final decisions about why I decided to stick with the D12 in the final iteration of Gas Bashers is due to a mechanic I put together for a previous attempted game that was heavily inspired by kaiju series like Godzilla, Pacific Rim, and other giant monsters attacking the city. And the concept behind that was a town clock that, as the game progresses, the clock ticks onward, and you roll a die, and if it's under that number, something bad happens. And of course, clock faces 12 numbers, so the D12 was the obvious choice. And then when I went in with the rest of the game, I realized that using the D12 gave me a narrow enough variance that was a little bit better than a D10, but a lot less than a D20, and actually gave me that flexibility that I wanted. Plus, again, it stands out.
Oh, it certainly does. What's the best story that's come out of a table while playing, or maybe one of your fans wrote it? I could tell you that I did a one shot last week with it, and I had so much fun, and I could tell you my story, but what's the best story either you've had playing it or you've heard from one of the fans so far?
So far, I just to do an abbreviation, we had a group from a review site, and well, they do reviews, some game blog, and they are also making an app. The group is called Worlds Unending, and they ran the game recently to give it a shot, just to see how it would go for their own review purposes. And the email I got back was that they just simply loved it. But what they did is they set their game in Eastern Pennsylvania, and the jabs at the state of New Jersey, which is my home state, was just so perfect and so spot on for Eastern Pennsylvania. It was just wonderful. And then hearing about how they actually progressed with the story, with some of the hijinks, I didn't have all the details outside of they just simply had a blast doing the investigation and tracking things down. A local friend of mine went ahead and ran a one shot, and it literally got to a point where a basher used another ghast basher as a weapon. So he just picked him up and just slammed him into the monster of the week. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh dear God, you literally just took this dude, picked him up, and slammed him into basically Michael Myers. And that's what he was doing.
That's
Like,
hilarious.
you know what? This is why I wanted to put the game together the way I did, because I wanted to let people do things that were absolutely off the wall, just absolutely bonkers, and still be fun. And that's why Ghostbusters is one of those themes, because I wanted to
Right.
have that horror, but know that it could still be comedic in the process. And as you can hear, tell just that whole idea of I'm going to club this guy with another guy, and the rules support it. Why not?
I'll tell you in my one shot that I ran with it, I ran with some like super veteran like hard skinned like gamers, and at one point one of the players I was playing the game master, and I had one of the players getting chased because their greatest fear was a windmill, which is one of the mechanics in Gas Bashers is you're supposed to pick like your greatest fear, and one of my players put as their biggest fear was windmills. So at one point they were trudging through a graveyard and they came across like a part of the graveyard that had a stone windmill and it came to life and it was chasing them around and it was hilarious. It was great. So that's my story.
Oh, that is amazing. That's Don Quixote worthy right
Yeah,
there.
absolutely.
I really hope that they had fun overcoming their fear there,
Oh, they did.
or at least smashing the thing into oblivion.
Yes. Have you play tested to see how many players it can take at once, or is it pretty typical of how many players can play in one table setting that's like other games?
The sweet spot that I've always had with every tabletop game I've run, Gas Bashers included, is between three and five. You can definitely pull off that six or seven if you really wanted to, but I've always found odd numbers work well, and three and five tend to be ideal. Once you get over five, the game, no matter what game you run, it starts to get a little unwieldy. The largest table I've ever run for was 15 players,
Oh no.
and I swore never again because I was running 7th C first edition at that time. And for anybody who knows, we're talking late 90s Renaissance swashbuckling with boatloads of 10-sided dice hitting the table and a very frustratingly long combat mechanic. And I was running it with 15 players.
Yikes.
Dumbest choice of my gaming college career. Never again. And over the years, I've realized no matter what game I run, it that sweet spot is definitely going to be between three and five. Seven's a good high end. Higher than that for more than a one shot gets really dicey.
Right.
So Gas Bashers falls into that. You can definitely pull off three to five, no hesitation. Seven, you could still probably pull it off without too much hassle. Anything more than that, I'd say just split your group. I know they'd say never split the party, but in this case, split your party. Save
Right.
yourself the sanity.
I'm gonna ask you a couple more questions, and because this is a paranormal show, I have to poke your paranormal brain because you live in the greatest state in the union when it comes to the paranormal. Actually, somebody in the chat, real quick, the Queen of the Night, Vex, wants to know, are you going to be testing at Gen Con?
I don't think I can pull off Gen Con. I'm still a small publisher and my name doesn't really carry very far, so I don't really get invites to things. And time and money are both issues. I've sunk a good deal of my own personal finances to get Gas Bashers up and running.
Understandable.
And the Kickstarter itself is basically covering the patches, paying the artists, and the print run. So it's all the physical rewards, and then paying my artist a proper wage because I refuse to do the whole, hey, I'm going to give you $10, give me this awesome piece of art. No, they're all getting paid proper wages for this, and then a tip on top of that because that's how I feel about the industry and the work they do.
Sure.
So I myself am not seeing much of anything. I might recoup maybe like 100 or 200 I put into it from before we did the Kickstarter. But outside of that, I myself am in the red for this project, and I'm okay with that because it means that the professionals I hired are actually getting paid.
That's good. And who knows? Maybe my reach in the world of the podcasting will get you somewhere. I hope so.
I would never object to that idea, but it is always a matter of time and money,
I get it.
because time I could make some time. Money is a little bit harder to come across some days.
I get you.
But that's COVID life right now.
No, I get it. How open can you make the world building?
You mean for Gas Bashers?
Yes.
It could be as open as you want. I specifically put in a sample setting for the modern day. Which explains the current state of the world and where the paranormal came from in theory, because it's all theories, and then the creation of the three styles of Gas Basher. You have the actual Gas Bashers, which are very similar to the Ghostbusters, people who said, let's just make these weapons to take out these supernatural creatures and make money off of it. And then you have the Bureau of Paranormal Inspection. And this is a group that is basically a cross of, your Delta Green groups, SCP, and the Men in Black. These are the ones that show up in suits and just utterly destroy the evidence of the paranormal whenever they can. And then you have what I like to call the sellouts. And these are what would happen if a big dude bro corporation in Silicon Valley said, it'd be really cool if we had our own paranormal hunters on our payroll and then create their own just because they can. So you already have three styles of character to work with, and then you have a setting that's available, and then I have a couple sidebars helping to break it down to other eras. So if you wanted to go ahead and set your monster hunters in medieval Europe, I'm not going to say no. The rules are there, ready to go to let you do that. You want to go ahead and have a group in early 2000s Japan? Have at it. here's everything you need. Go hunt those Tengu and Kappa and everything else you could find over there. And that was the whole point. I wanted to give people basically the keys to the universe and say, go play.
Okay, very good. Count Panic, do you have a question before I dive into the paranormal side of things?
I think it's fantastic, and I know we got some codes that he was nice enough to send us as well. We're going to
figure out. We'll talk about that in
okay,
a second.
Okay, I don't want to
jump in the game.
I'm jumping
in. Jumping in.
All right. Just want to make sure you remember
that happens.
It.
Okay, so the last question I have for you, and then we're diving into the paranormal, and this is a good segue into it, is how many cryptids are a part of the system, and where can I find their stats? That's a specific question from one of my fan discords.
Okay. So at the moment, I have a limited number of monsters because I wanted to provide enough monsters to give people ideas about how to build their own, but not so many that people felt like they only had to work with what they had. And part of it was also paying the artist for each of these creatures as they come about. Because I hate giving something stats without a picture. There's no fun in that. Especially for a game like this. So I've made hints to a couple cryptids, and thanks to the third artist we roped in, Cat Goddess, I have a cryptid that is basically a cross of a rawhead, also known as, what was it, Bloody Bones, I think it was yep. The other name for it. And it's a mix of that with Mothman.
Oh.
we don't Mothman
yeah.
here.
So that was the thing. There's I don't actually have any cryptids by name specifically in the book, because I would stat the Jersey Devil as, somebody else would say, no, that's definitely not Jersey Devil. That's not Mothman. That's not Braxy. That's not Bigfoot or a Chupacabra or whatever else they want to pull out of the cryptid hat. So instead, I've given some guidelines about how to go ahead and stat your own local favorite cryptid and put them into your game. Because that's... I'd rather hand you the keys to do that and make it fitting for your table instead of me over or underestimating a cryptid that I'm only reading about from a distance.
Compound Guda, you roll up something for Yule Cat, right?
Yule Cat or the Walking Pair of Pants. That'd be
the Fresno Nightwalker.
Why not? Why not? Oh, wow.
Now, Anthony, you're from West Virginia, so I get to pick a West Virginian's brain, and this is a Bob After Dark first. You're in, like, paranormal capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with my the number one question of, have you been to Point Pleasant recently or at all?
I have not. I actually moved to West Virginia 5 years ago for... 5.5 years ago now, for the library job I'm currently working. And the first couple years, it was, you know, we had some on and off travel, but not a lot for cryptid hunting and the like. But at the very least, I've been to Flatwoods and got to hear about the Flatwoods Monster, and been meaning to go to the museum there, just haven't had the opportunity. Point Pleasant, same situation. Everyone's telling me I need to go, and I just haven't been able to make it work. And then when I finally have the time, it's during a freaking plague.
Yeah, right. And we got a... What's your cat's name, by the way? Because I saw a cat on the screen, and now we have like 40 million views because of the cat.
Well, this cat is Babel. This is my little ginger minion.
Oh, he looks like my Indiana Jones.
And he got his name because he is much more talkative than I am. I guess he learned it from me. And he was very good at mimicking the meows and growls and whatnot of other creatures around him. So I thought Babel was rather appropriate considering the circumstances.
Okay.
So if you hear a meow in the background, it's Babel. I am sorry. Totally
no, don't.
Not sorry.
No, you're not. I'm not sorry for you. It's fine. I assure you. So, you're in West Virginia, so I feel like you're going to be biased when you answer this question. But what's your favorite cryptid?
Believe it or not, it's not going to be a West Virginia cryptid because I'm not from West
that's
Virginia.
Fair. You live there though, so I just automatically assume you put out the pepperoni rolls in the Mountain Dew for West Virginia Day.
I mean, you know, that's just to make sure that, you know, Mothman doesn't kick down my door like the Kool-Aid Man and demand tribute. I mean, I value my life, thank you very much, but, you know, I don't hate myself that much. favorite cryptid. It it's a very tough call because on one hand, being from New Jersey makes me just want to simply say the Jersey Devil.
Yes.
But I have a very good appreciation for all of the types of yokai that you would be reading about in Japan. And it's really hard to just pick one of those. And, you know, some people argue whether or not they're actually cryptids or not, or, you know, the individuals, or if it's just a set of specific ghosts. So I can't pick just one. It's like asking a librarian what's their favorite book. Never, ever ask me my favorite book. So
fair enough.
Do you... But no, it's, you know, Jersey Devil's up there on the list just because I'm from New Jersey. But then sure. It's a battle of favorite yokai at that point.
That's good. I'm actually talking about a yokai tonight on the show, Children of the Night. Mm-hmm. So stick around. We're going to be talking about the Tengu. What's fine? And if you like the yokai, what is your favorite yokai?
Oddly enough, it would be the Tengu.
That's strange how the universe works.
Absolutely, because I mean, when you think about it, I mean, they're, you know, without, hopefully I'm not spoiling anything, but you had these creatures that were considered to be one part trickster and dangerous, but then they were roped into Buddhist belief to actually be protector spirits.
Well, so let's not spoil too much about the show tonight, Anthony. I'm not going to have any material that I know. It's just going to be me sitting here looking pretty for a little bit.
Nope, that's all I'm saying about Tengu, but you know, there are reasons why I think Tengu are amazing. And right there, there's one of them. You'll have to listen to the other part of the show for Bob to give you the rest of
Thank you, Anthony. And hear that, guys. We got a own plug on the show for all of Anthony's fans that are watching right now or listening, which I appreciate. Funny enough, my new panel series I'm launching this year, actually next week at my convention in Denver, I'll be doing the Yokai panel, which so that'll be premiering in person, at least, because I did the OhioCon one. So my next panel will be next Friday at NandesuCon Denver. I'll be there doing my yokai panel. So it's kind of a weird, you know, weird similarities here between me and you here.
Oh, I have a feeling if we were in the same place at the same time, either we'd get along just fine or try taking the other one's head off because there could be only one.
There could be only – do you have a paranormal podcast or what? Because I think we're going to have to fight then.
Podcasting is not a topic I've gotten into. I'm quite happy sitting over here hammering out game mechanics in my not so copious free time.
Fair enough. So on the spectrum of believer, non-believer, or middle of the road, which team do you hang out at?
Oh, I hang out on believer.
Okay, that's hear that, Kyle Panic?
I hear that.
He's a believer.
He's a believer.
Hold on. Now, Anthony, we got to ask you a question since you're a believer, and I'm a believer too, and I think Count Panic falls in the believer category. Count Panic has a story that I'm actually skeptical about, and we still have a couple minutes left of the interview before we got to move on. Can you tell him about the one skeptical story I'm super skeptical about and see Anthony's reaction?
The swing
set. Gary Witch.
The Gary Witch. All right. Well, Anthony, we live near Gary, Indiana. And a couple years back, there was a witch sighting. She was on a swing set. She was wearing a big hat and a typical rich gear, and she was swinging on a swing set, abandoned field. And I said, Bob, this must be a real witch. Bob doesn't think it's a real witch. I mean, have you ever heard about this? Just witches in abandoned fields swinging on swing sets? I think it's real.
I mean, but, you know, the whole, like, breaking out the hat, that's just such a, that's where you get into that stereotypical, they're in it for the aesthetic territory. Oh. And, you know, at that point, like, you know, if they're an actual witch, you know, I wouldn't know. But, you know, the hat is not the giveaway about somebody being a witch. That's just an aesthetic anymore.
She was drinking pumpkin spice as well, so I'm not sure.
I fell on the skeptical side here.
Really? Well, we got to find her and prove it. We'll see.
So if you are listening, please, you know, stand up and let them know.
Call us. We got to get her on the show.
Okay, Anthony, let's talk a little bit about where people can find your game at, because your Kickstarter is over, correct?
The Kickstarter is over. It ended on July 31st. And everything has moved over to my itch page, which is a librarian NPC. That's librarianpc.itch.io.
What's itch? Is that ITCH or ICH?
ITCH.
ITCH. And people can find your game digitally on there, correct?
They can find it digitally, and once I have the print copies in hand and get those out to the Kickstarter backers, I will also be posting the print copies of the game, at least what's left of that print run, available there. There may or may not be a discussion I'm having with a RPG distributor that may end up making this available a little bit more than just in the US, but that is still in the works until after we get everything finalized.
So, international children, you're going to have to stick to the digital version for the moment.
I mean, I'm still willing to ship out copies internationally. It's just going to cost an arm and a leg to mail it.
Fair
But
enough.
yeah, we did have international shipping options in the Kickstarter. I am still more than willing to ship it internationally. It's just a little bit difficult on the itch.io page. But if you reach out to me directly, which again, you can find me on most social media under my handle, Librarian NPC. Twitter's one of your best bets. But if you were to flag me down, tag me, send me a message, always willing to go ahead and talk shop and send things out to people.
That's fantastic. And before we got a couple more things to do here, but before we do, I just want to congratulate you because your Kickstarter was successful.
It was my first Kickstarter, and we, even though I set the funding goal to be on the low side, we did hit 200% funding.
That's great.
And and even though like I myself am not seeing profit personally, the idea that the book is going to be finished, actually have a lot of original art and be printed is a big deal for me.
What's next for Gas Bashers?
I'm still up in the air on that. Once I right now I'm focusing on just getting this out there. I
Right.
really want to make sure that I get the Kickstarter fulfilled because I'm a man of my word and I don't want to be backing out from that promise. And if I can get the universe to agree, I might be able to get it out a couple months early instead of the December release that I originally planned. But that's going to depend on the mail and other factors outside of my control. Beyond that, I have a couple other game projects on the list that are not Gas Bashers. It's just whether or not they finally come to existence. But one thing I've been contemplating is a next title for Gas Bashers that we are using the code name Teams, Threats, and Tacos. And
Okay.
the whole point of that is to pick various parts of the world, just different cities and different countries, mention some of the problems that the paranormal hunters would face in those individual areas, and then add in the various folklores and legends of each of those areas, and then give a couple stats out. So it's just something about a British team of pseudo BPI agents cursed by a Rakshasa from India because of the whole colonizer thing.
Gotcha.
Or a chupacabra that loves to go ahead and ruin taco trucks in Texas.
Okay.
It's that thus the team's threats and tacos. Just play around with that sort of thing. I'm contemplating how I want to do that. Of course, debating whether or not I want to do a print run or just stick with a PDF run, and then of course getting the art for it, which is another financial thing I'll worry about as we go.
Sure.
But that is one of the other projects for Gas Bashers I'm considering, is just adding basically a world book to help expand outside of the US centric focus I have in the limited page count that I have in the core book.
Okay. Now, Children of the Night, we were very lucky. Anthony actually sent us some codes to give away to you. So on the Children of the Night Facebook page, which is our fan page, I'll put up something in there for you guys to be able to get some copies of your own so you guys can test that out. Anthony was very sweet enough to do that. I'm not keeping a code because I backed it. So my code is up for grabs for one of the fans. We'll
I
have to
took a cold, Bob.
you took a you're actually gonna play.
You know what? I'm gonna give it a try.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So I
Well,
already was reading up about it about early right before the show, and I was looking at all the copies and stuff like that,
yeah,
so.
so we'll find a way to do something real fun with that where you guys can get a chance to get a code. Anthony was very sweet to share that with us, so we're gonna give our children tonight a chance to play this game. And real quick, Anthony, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And we do have a lot of convention contacts that listen to the show because during normal times, I'd be on the road every other week to a convention. So to my convention people, contact Anthony. We need to get this game out there. I want to see this like be as big as something like I Hunt or, World of Darkness, because it's a fun system. It's a fun game, and for my paranormal enthusiasts, it's such a cool way to kind of stretch your legs creatively. And I give it the Bob Anderson like two stamps of approval. It's like two thumbs up.
There you
I'm
go.
a big or two Mothman wings up, I
Sure.
guess. I'm a very big fan of the game, and I think any paranormal enthusiast can really get into it. This is I'm kind of a dummy when it comes to these things. It's not my forte. I'm very much like a very like I play a little bit of these types of things, and if I can figure it out and run a game with a very little help, anybody can. So I highly recommend it. It's the system's easy, and Anthony is a sweetheart, as you guys all know here now. So convention people, get Anthony on the horn. We need to get him play testing at these cons, and we need him to get booths. So let's get him set up, everybody.
I do appreciate the words of praise and approval. When I launched this, I was worried that I wouldn't even hit the $2,000 goal because it's that whole, it's only my fourth game and I have a reputation of reviews, not writing, and just the very concept of new developer first Kickstarter. Most people just think, oh, he's not going to do anything special. But the fact that I even hit funding just floored me. And then seeing the continued support and love for the game has made all the difference.
All right, Anthony, thank you so much. And one last time, how could people find you?
You can find me on most social media platforms. Twitter's probably your best bet, which is just simply Librarian NPC, just simply spelled as Librarian PC. The game itself is called Ghast Bashers, Ghast Bashers. And you can find that on itch.io. And again, if you just hunt down that term, whether it's Librarian NPC or Gas Bashers, you'll find me. Trust me.
Excellent. And guys, check the game out. I'm a big fan. It's cost efficient too. It's not going to break your pocket. You don't have to buy stacks of books at the Barnes and Noble to play it. You get one PDF and you'll be fine to play it. So check it out. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on Bob After Dark. I appreciate it.
And thank you again for having me. I really do appreciate the opportunity and getting the word out. I hope you continue to enjoy the game and the updates that I'll be uploading hopefully this weekend.
Coming soon, we're gonna do some Twitch stuff again. So I'll do a Twitch stream of me playing Gas Bashers so you guys can check that out.
All right, definitely keep me in the loop. I'd love to share the word. And if you need an extra body, just give me a holler. I'd love to at least see what you're doing with it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. You have a good one, Anthony. Good night.
You guys do the same. Take care and thanks again.
All right, children, we have a phone call. We're gonna take that here in just a second. Phone person, stay on the phone.
Yes, they've been hanging out.
Well,
Rick
let's just put him on the phone.
gave us a 5-star review last week.
Rick gave us a 5-star review. Rick, are you still on the line with us?
Bob, I am here. Yak Shimash.
Oh, Dobzha.
Dobzha. Hey. Yeah,
Rick's
long.
Polish.
That's I had to my dad somewhere's proud of me that I was
Yeah.
able to do that proper. How are you tonight, Rick?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you, Bob?
Not bad. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Well, hey, what's going on up in Grand Rapids?
Oh, let me tell you, Bob. First of all, I want to tell you about a story you might want to do an episode about.
I'd love to hear it.
The Ada Witch Cemetery.
The what was it? I'm sorry.
The Ada Witch
Ada
Cemetery,
Witch
ADC.
Cemetery.
Yeah, I'm not going to go ahead and then spoil the story too much for you, but there's a lover's triangle kind of thing going on. I think it was like in the 1800s. Did a little ghost hunting there myself back in the day, and it didn't turn out too well. It got pretty freaky pretty quickly. But the Ada Witch Cemetery. I called and I told you I had some stories of my own to tell you about.
I'd love to
I
hear
mean,
some of them. You got time?
I'm not going to tell you about all of them right now. I'll give them to you in the little bits and
I,
pieces
you know
here.
what? I can appreciate somebody who actually wants to call and talk on the show, so you're more than welcome to it.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm going to tell you, in regarding to your Swamp Monsters episode.
This guy knows
A
his
fan,
stuff.
yeah.
That's a throwback.
That's a throwback. It sure is. I had three other people with me that saw this thing. So, And the first thing, whenever you tell someone about this kind of thing, they tell you, well, what were you on? I wasn't on anything. We were 12 years old at the time, so we were not on anything. So let me go ahead and tell you. A friend of mine, his dad was a military guy. So when he said something, he meant it. And we said, sorry if there's a little bit of traffic noise going on right now. I live on a busy street.
No worries.
We were spending the night at a friend's house, and we wanted to stay in the tent overnight. So we asked his dad, hey, can we put a tent up and have a bonfire? He said, yeah, that's fine. But as soon as I lock these doors are locked for the night. Don't come knocking on the doors and open, and you know, you're out there for the night. So we did that. We waited for about an hour for him to go to sleep, and we snuck off about 1 in the morning, went skateboarding at a church nearby. And this church has several swamps around it. We're sitting there skateboarding, and I see a friend of mine. He's sitting there staring at something. So I walk up next to him. I'm like, what are you looking at? And I'm looking, and I kid you not, this thing comes walking out of the woods. It looked almost exactly like Creature from the Black Lagoon. Comes walking out of the woods. And there was a fence nearby that was about 6 feet high. There was a baseball field there that had lights on. So it was very brightly lit. And its head was about a foot higher than this fence. It put its hand on the fence and jumped over the fence, pushed itself up over the fence with one fell swoop, and started making its way toward us. Well, we, as you can imagine, as being 12-year-old kids with some strange creature that you can't explain coming near you, we started freaking out a little bit. And a couple of friends of mine were, one of them, he started saying Hail Marys and crossing himself. And we're trying to get in this church, and we couldn't get into it. The doors were locked. So, we have skateboards. So we just started skateboarding on our way back to my friend's house. And every time we looked back, this thing was peeking its head out from behind someone's boat, from behind someone's house. And then we had to spend the rest of the night in a tent. That was one of the most terrifying nights of my life.
Huh.
And I kid you not, Bob, I kid you not. I had three other people. I asked one of my friends of mine just not too long ago. I'm like, hey, do you remember when that happened, or am I just imagining this? And he goes, nope, that happened.
Where were you at when you saw this thing? Were you in Michigan, like where you're at now, or were you somewhere else?
Yeah, no, I'm where I'm at now, in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Do you, Companica, this is a silly question to ask you, but do you know any other cases like that in Grand Rapids?
Can't say I do, Bob. Although I'm not an expert on
paranormal. That's why I'm like, I'm looking to you like, do you know? And you're like, is it Yolcat? I don't know.
Yolcat might be in Grand Rapids. I'm not sure.
Have you ever heard of anybody else ever seeing this before, Rick?
It could be Yolcat.
Could be. Could be the walking pants.
I'm a big fan of Yolcat, trust me.
Me too.
But I'm thinking, okay, what are the chances of some kind of guy just like waiting in a costume in the middle of the night in a swamp for some kids that might or might not come by going skateboarding? Like, this is at 1 in the morning, and this is not a normal thing that we've done.
So you understand I'm a believer, so, and you are in a safe place for you to share that story. The only thing,
that's why I love you guys.
Absolutely. And I don't question your story, because, sometimes when you're doing, research for these, interviews, when you talk to somebody who's ever had a sighting, you got to go through and kind of list off things that they could have been. I don't really have an answer of what could it have been. Skeptic of me says maybe it was somebody that goes out there and makes sure that people stay off their property. I don't know. And again, that's just me throwing it out there.
Portal maybe?
Could be very much so. It could also be... I don't know. That's a bizarre thing. I'm going to do some research, Rick, and I've seen you post recently on the Children of Night page, so I'll do some digging for you and see if I can come up with anything for you.
Tell you what though, Bob, I got lots of ghost stories for you. I've lived in haunted houses. I've lived in a haunted apartment. I have some freaky stories for you, but we're going to save that for another time.
I appreciate that, Rick. And listen, from the bottom of my heart, one, I appreciate you hanging out during the interview and not hanging up. That meant a lot.
That was a long one.
I hope you enjoyed it at least. And then the other thing is I appreciate you listening to the show and calling all the way from Grand Rapids. That's really amazing.
I love you guys. I mean, like, serious. I mean, like, when I said you guys are right up my alley, I really mean it. This is really, it really gets my brain tingling. It's soul food right there.
Oh, thank you very much. That means so much to me. I hope you have a good night, Rick.
Thanks, Bob. I'll talk to you soon, all right,
talk
brother?
To you soon. Have a good one, man.
All right, you too, my friend.
Thank you. Can't panic, that was Rick.
Very nice.
And that's nice to hear.
Yes.
That means so much to me on a personal level. Thank you, Rick.
Yeah. Five-star review, too.
He left a five-star review.
Nice.
All right, Kyle Panic.
Yeah.
That's been a long episode so far.
Well.
And we haven't even got to this. We haven't got to anything left yet. So it's just going to be a longer episode, that's
okay.
All right, Children Night, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. For our live fans, stick around. Then to our podcast fans, stay tuned. You're about to hear from a podcast that you should be sticking around and listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Cal.
Hey, Bob.
What did you do during break?
I defeated the game.
No, you what?
I played the game.
What game?
Ghastly game.
Oh, Gas Bashers.
Yeah.
Oh, what'd you think?
I won.
It's not a game you win.
Oh, I know. I got to play it.
Do you want to know what I did during break?
What'd you do?
I finished my water and I didn't get a chance to get it anymore.
Well, that's not good, Bob.
No, I was about to wave down like the janitorist and be like, hey, can you please?
They might help you out.
Yeah. It's all right. No big deal. So we're still doing the show. All right, Children of the Night. So we're going to dive right into the news articles. And we're just going to go one by one. We're going to get this through, and then we're going to dive into the lore of the week because we're running a little long this episode, which is fine. It's not that big of a deal. But Anthony was so cool on the show. I could have probably talked to him for another 45 minutes to an hour just talking about gaming. But
and as always, you can call in 219-845-1100.
And Rick was so cool on the phone, too. This is a good episode. This is a positive episode, if you will.
If we end it right now, Bob.
If I ended it here, it'd be good, but we got a whole show to do. All right, so first story comes to us from James. He wrote this in. This is from Central Illinois Proud, which was posted from the Associated Press in Boston. And this is a eighth grader's push to get wrongfully convicted witch pardoned. More than three centuries after the Massachusetts woman was wrongfully convicted of witchcraft and was sentenced to death, she's finally on the verge of being exonerated thanks to a curious eighth grade civics class. State Senator Diana DeZoglio, a Democrat from Methuen, had introduced legislation to clear the name of Elizabeth Johnson Jr., who was condemned in 1693 at the height of the Salem witch trials but was never executed. DeZoglio says she was inspired by the sleuthing done by the group of 13 and 14-year-olds at North Andover Middle School. Civics teacher Carrie LaPierre's students painstakingly researched Johnson and the steps that would have needed to take to make sure that she was formally pardoned. It is important that we work to correct history, DeZoglio said Wednesday. We will never be able to change what happened to these victims, but in the very least we can set the record straight. If lawmakers approve the measure, Johnson will be the last accused witch to be cleared, according to Witches of Massachusetts Bay, a group devoted to the history and lore of the 17th century witch hunts. 20 people from Salem, our neighboring towns, were killed, and hundreds of others were accused during a frenzy of injustice that began in 1692. Stoked by superstition, fear of disease, and by strangers, scapegoating, and petty jealousies, 19 were hung, and one man was crushed to death by rocks. In the 328 years that have ensued, dozens of suspects were officially cleared, including Johnson's own mother, the daughter of a minister whose conviction eventually was reversed. But for some reason, Johnson's name was not included in the various legislative attempts to set the record straight. Johnson was 22 when she caught up in the hysteria of the witch trials and sentenced to be hung. It never happened. Then Governor William Phipps threw out the punishment as the magnitude of the gross miscarriages to justice in Salem sank in. But because she wasn't among those convictions who were formally set aside, hers technically stands. Why Elizabeth was never exonerated is unclear, but no action was ever given on her behalf by the General Assembly over the courts, Diogo said. Possibly because neither wife nor a mother, she was not considered worthy enough to have her name cleared. And because she never had children, there is no group of descendants acting on her behalf. Her bill would tweak the 1957 legislation, amended in 2001, to include Johnson among others who were pardoned after wrongfully accused and convicted of witchcraft. In 2017, officials unveiled a semicircle stone wall memorial inscribed with the names of the people hung at the site in Salem known as Proctor's Ledge. It was funded in part by donations from the descendants of those accused of being witches. LaPierre, the teacher, said some of her students initially were ambivalent about the effort to exonerate Johnson because they launched it before the 2020 presidential election, and at the time when the COVID 2019 pandemic was raging. Some of the conversation was, well, why are we doing this? She's dead. Isn't there more important stuff going on in the world? She said. But they came around to the idea that it's important that in some small way, we could do just this one thing. Hashtag panic steak.
That's a warming story there, Bob. Although you talk about the witches in that story.
Yeah.
And still yet, no justice and love.
Yeah.
It's for the Gary Witch.
Panic.
Okay.
No, you have to understand, yes. Folks, it's 2021, and witchcraft is it's more practiced now, or at least it's publicly out there that people practice now than ever. And the fact that this dark history still looms over us, and the fact that a very importantly practiced religion by many folk of all walks of life, and even growing in numbers now, especially, you know, with things like TikTok and stuff, it's time to get these people's names pardoned, whether they were practicing or not, because a lot of these people that were accused were falsely accused, and that's not okay. And then the other side of it is, even if somebody was practicing, still no right to execute them, and that's not okay. And the fact that we can do something about this in this day and age and get that legislation, like, put in, that we can exalt this, Johnson's name, I'm all about it. And I think it's a good note on a very bad story. And unfortunately, there's not too much else we can do other than that, but deserves to get that name.
Sure. We support the witches there
and everywhere.
Are on the swing sets.
And everywhere.
And everywhere.
We love every single one of you, regardless of your belief.
Even in practice. Gary.
Yeah. Thanks, Count Panic. All right, let's move on to the next one. This story actually comes to us from our old pal, Tim Banal.
Okay.
Tim Banal of Coast to Coast AM. This one's, the Lizzie Borden House is hiring a ghost hunter. Remember we talked recently that the Lizzie Borden House went up for sale and someone bought it. That wasn't our old pal Zach Baggins.
I thought that, okay, it wasn't.
Zach did not buy it. The new owners of the Lizzie Borden House are looking to hire a genuine ghost hunter to lead nightly paranormal investigations at the infamous residence. The home, located in Fall River, Massachusetts, was the scene of a grisly double axe murder in 1892. The gruesome and mysterious killings of Andrew and Abby Borden, as well as the subsequent trial of their daughter Lizzie, who is suspected of having committed the dastardly deed, was a bona fide media sensation at the time and is considered one of America's first true crime cases. In modern times, the home has been a tourist attraction by virtue of its dark history and claims that the spirits of the two slain Bordens remain lingering in the residence. Purchased earlier this year by the company U.S. Ghost Adventures, the Lizzie Borden House has recently begun offering nightly ghost tours for visitors hoping to get an encounter with spirits said to be living in the home. According to the listing posted by the group, the part-time job pays between $25 to $25 an hour.
It's not bad.
And applicants required to have at least 2 years of paranormal investigation experience. Beyond that, they should also possess extensive knowledge of ghost hunting equipment, as well as excellent conversational skills with a knack of storytelling. And, of course, one presumes that they should also not be afraid of encountering any ghosts, since their job will be able to seek out spirits every night. Count Panic, normally I would pass this on to you for a Panic's take, but this is a Bob's take. I am moving to Massachusetts. Absolutely not. I am going to go apply for this job to go be the paranormal investigator at the Lizzie Borden house.
$25 an hour?
$25 an hour. Excuse me.
How much are you getting paid now to investigate?
Not $25 an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Perfect. What a gig.
That's amazing. Yeah, they say it's part-time. Sure, you're probably working like 4 or 5 hours a night, but please.
Well, they probably think too, maybe, Bob, that folks might be too fearful once they start working, that something might happen, they'll drive them out. But $25 an hour, and you assume 2 years of experience, equipment, you know, a lot of folks might be down for that. So it might be something to look into, Bob.
I joke. I can't just up and move to Massachusetts. As much as I want this job, whoever gets this job is going to have the coolest career in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, I fit every one of those things. This is the one time I look at, like, a job requirement. It's like, I have extensive knowledge of equipment. I also know how I've also been investigating for far more than 2 years. And I have a knack for storytelling. I run this podcast every week that's becoming slowly my pseudo job for a living. And I'm getting back on the road, and I've done panels at conventions, and I've talked in front of big crowds before, and I'm very personable and know how to communicate very well. That's like everything I've ever wanted in my life.
That is everything you ever wanted in your life.
That's amazing. Listen, I to the people of the greater Chicagoland, could we take heed from the Lizzie Borden house and hire me to do the investigations every night for $25 an hour? I'd really appreciate it. We have a caller on the line, I'm assuming it's John.
It's John.
Hey there, John. You're on the air.
Hey, $25 an hour. That's pretty good money there,
that's
Bob.
Pretty decent money to go do some investigations, yeah. John.
Yeah, especially something that you like to do, and you just gave off your credentials, so I would hire you in a heartbeat.
All right, John, so what you're saying is you're going to have some place I can investigate for $25 an hour, right?
Well, you mean I got to come up with something?
I didn't know. I thought this was a job offer, John. You're offering me a job.
Well, is it a job offer?
I don't know. Are you offering me a job?
I'm not asking you. No, I'm not going to pay you for $25. I thought there was a job out there.
I would love to find a gig like that. That sounds great. Until I'm doing this full time, that sounds like the best day job or night job, I guess.
There is really a job out there that you might want to venture into like that. But excuse me on that.
That's all right.
The caller from Michigan, Rick, I mean, he had a pretty good, interesting story there. He described that creature and everything. But not to put him or you on the spot, but, you know, as an investigator, wouldn't you pursue that after the fact that he's seen something like that to see, you know, what the possibility of that could be?
That's a good question.
He was young
at the time, and I mean, I probably would have been a little scared of a swamp monster too, but ripe age old 30-year-old Bob, who does the paranormal investigations and research for a pseudo living, I would have been lacing up my, you know, putting my pants in my shoe area there, and I would have been trudging right through that swamp.
Oh, okay. So when he mentioned he was 12 when he seen the creature. Is that correct?
That's what the story said.
Yeah, okay. I heard 12 mentioning, the age of 12 mentioned there, but I'm just thinking, you know, he was in his adult life already when he's seen it. But so a little mixed up there. But hey, Bob, so you're doing all right?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little sleepy tonight, John, but other than that, okay. I'm a little wet, too, and a lot of rain out there.
Yeah, it's still pouring out there. So, hey, all righty, get a good night's rest.
That's the plan. Good night, John. We'll talk soon. See you next week, John.
Yep.
Well, that was very sweet of John to call it.
It is still raining. Oh, look
at
that.
It's not as bad as what it was, though. It's nowhere near as the wall of rain.
You do seem to bring a lot of thunderstorm action from time to time.
It's called my energy is in an all-time flux there, Cal Panic.
Yeah, I guess. All you're getting drained by this storm, I think, Bob. But, yes. Got to apply for that $25.
That's what I was going to say, man. That sounds like the best job. Best job ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You're doing the same investigation every night, though. I guess that'd be, like, the only downside is it gets really repetitive.
Yeah, but you never know what could happen.
You're absolutely correct.
It could be different every night.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm all about it. I would love, if I was closer to the area, I'd be applying for that job 1,000,000%. All right, moving on to the last story, and this one comes to us from the Latin Times. A Bigfoot sighting. Man photographs alleged Sasquatch during a boat trip in Kentucky late. A Kentucky man reportedly spotted a tall creature covered in fur that resembled a Sasquatch wandering by the lakeside during his recent boat trip to Lake Cumberland, sharing photos of the mysterious cryptid online. Jared Arnett of Pulaski County, Arkansas, was left aghast after spotting a puzzling creature standing near the banks of Lake Cumberland during the recent boating trip. Snapping a handful of photos of the baffling beast before it slipped away into the woods, Arnett first thought that the creature was a grizzly bear, but on further observation, he realized that it might have actually been Bigfoot, WKDQ reported. The alleged Sasquatch was observed standing on its two hind legs and covered in matted fur throughout its body. And he posted the picture online, and this thing is bipedal. I will tell you from the photos, which I will share over to Count Panic here shortly so we can get that up on the page, it almost looks like a ghillie suit. That would be like looking at it, a ghillie suit meaning like a camouflage, you know, somebody wears them when they go hunting or something like that. It does look like a ghillie suit. But it's a fascinating photo nonetheless. Arnett shared the photos on the sighting on his Facebook page with the caption, "Just spotted at Lake Cumberland. Not the first time I've seen it either. This is real." The post received more than 1,000 likes and had been shared by over 5,000 people. As of Wednesday, July 28th, several citizens had interesting takes on the viral photographs. Gregory Olsen commented on the post saying that the creature in this photo is his mother-in-law going on a walk. Gregory, that's terrible of you. "I've got a few in my backyard as well," Brandon Lee wrote in comments. "Yep, saw him at McDonald's earlier today," and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. People just kind of chiming in about it. The Pulaski County Sheriff Department is reportedly investigating the incident, saying that the photos have been submitted to experts for the analysis of their authenticity. Hashtag panic steak.
So it comes down to, you know, how authentic are these photos or videos? Like I say, every time you see a video or photo, it seems to be pretty blurry, Bob. There's never a clear photo, but I guess who are the proper authorities on this? Who's studying these photos? They said experts are studying these photos, correct? But is there a certain name to these organizations looking at this type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, when you submit claims like this, you have people like Steve out there in the world that specialize in looking at these and trying to figure out what exactly they're looking at. I'm a little trained when it comes to those types of things, and looking at the picture, like I said, it definitely looks like a person in a ghillie suit. Not saying the photo is staged by any means. You know, you're out in the wilderness in you know, by Kentucky Lake. I've been there as a kid, so I remember it very, you know, vividly. It is kind of a remote area, so it doesn't surprise me if there's somebody out there hunting that just happened to go dive by the water for fill in the blank reason. So I would suggest it's probably somebody out in the woods, but it's a very good-looking picture. Definitely bipedal, and it does fit the similarities. If I saw it from a distance right away and I was photographing it, I would have definitely thought it was a Sasquatch as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I say, I think if I was looking at those photos, Bob, I would just see if there's a zipper on the back. That's how you can tell if it's fake or not. But, again, always so blurry, always out of focus when it comes to photos and videos.
There's another paranormal podcast, friends of our show here, called the my seat is dying, Cal Panic. I'm sinking to the
You know,
floor.
You're not the first one that had the problem.
Cal Panic, I'm sinking to the floor as we speak. Oh my God, I'm literally like, what? Excuse me.
All right, so there's a lever on the side of that.
I'm melting currently. Yeah. Let me stand up real quick. Yeah.
The first one to have that same problem.
I was like, excuse me, that was a bit weird. Let me sit back down here. That was just a strange.
I don't know why it does that sometimes.
going down again.
You
all right, I don't know what's going on here, Children Night, but I'm slowly descending into the ground. I am currently melting. I'm melting.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm just. Oh boy, I'll just do the show from here. I'll be a literal talking head.
I can get real stone there, but go ahead.
No, Mark. Don't worry about it. It's fine. It's okay. I'm on the ground. It's all right. So, yeah, no, another blurry picture of Sasquatch being filmed out, being taken, and this one's actually pretty clear. The photos, it's not so blurry as it is like you can't really tell.
Yeah.
But that's my two cents.
All right. There you have it.
There you have it. Now, calm panic.
Yeah.
You want to talk about this week's lore of the week?
Sure. What is it?
All right. So normally we would take another break, which we're not. We're okay, because I'm not doing two commercial breaks in one episode. So normally we would do like a review of the week, but we don't have a new one. So remember, folks, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, to go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars. Give cheers out for me and Count Bannock, just like Rick, who called in the show this week. So make sure you all leave a nice 5-star review so we can talk to you, give you a shout out on the show. And remember to reach out to us with your spooky tales. You can slide into our DMs, facebook.com/BobAfterDark, TikTok at BobAfterDark, Instagram at BobAfterDark, and Twitter at BobAfterDark1. So follow us on social media, leave us a 5-star review, and let's dive into the lore of the week. Now, Count Panic, what do you know about birds?
Well, some people say they aren't real. Some people have their favorite kind of birds. I know there's old baby pigeons out there. That's really all I know about birds, Bob.
Well, I'm fascinated by the concept of flight. I always have been. It's maybe the air sign of the Libra in me that I'm very fascinated by the concept of flying, or the Rocketeer Jetpack Man that we've been talking about in LA recently. But I'm a big fan of the concept of flying, and in regards to that, some of my favorite cryptids and favorite paranormal stories about things that kind of fly around. Obviously, my favorite paranormal story of all time being Mothman, and not be, you know, half moth, half man. Now, Mothman's not the only creature out there in the world that has a flying. It's an interesting concept, right? I like that type of thing, because it's like, it can swoop down and get you, and it's kind of a spooky feeling that you're being watched or you could be attacked at any point. So I was doing some digging, and I came across this thing in a book I was reading, and I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't really understand the big concept behind it. So I was reading a book recently, I was reading a book called Encounters with Flying Humanoids. It's written by Ken Gerhard. And Ken in that book just talks about winged creatures and, you know, different monsters and cryptids and legends about bird-like entities. Again, some of my most fascinating stories. And I found this creature by the name of the Tengu.
Tengu.
The Tengu, T-E-N-G-U. And I knew a little bit about it. It's a yokai, and you know, when you do the yokai stuff, it kind of, you glance across things in these really colorful, really cool paintings that people did throughout history of these creatures. It's really fascinating stuff, and it's all I really knew about it. And then I started doing some more research for the episode, and I was like, wow, this thing actually has a lot of background to it. And so this week we're talking about the Japanese yokai, or potential deity itself, the Tengu.
All right.
So, according to the Yokai Wiki, the Tengu are a type of legendary creature found in Japanese folk religion and are considered a type of Shinto god, kami, or a yokai, a supernatural being. Although they take their name from dog-like Chinese demon the Tengu were originally thought to take forms of birds of prey, and they are traditionally depicted with both human and avian characteristics. The earliest Tengu were pictured with beaks, but this feature has been humanized as an unnaturally long nose. In modern days, the appearance is widely considered to be the Tengu's defining characteristic in popular imagination. Buddhism long held that the Tengu were disruptive demons and harbingers of war. Their image gradually softened, however, into one of protective, if still dangerous, spirits of the mountains and forest. Tengu are associated with the aesthetic practice known as Shungandu, They usually are depicted as in the distinctive garb of its followers, the Yamabushi. The Tengu in art appears to in large number of shapes and but usually falls somewhere between a large monstrous bird and a wholly anthropomorphized being. They are most often with a red face or an unusual large nose or beak. Early depictions of the Tengu show them as a kite-like being who can take human-like form, often retaining its avian wings, heads, or beaks. The Tengu's long nose seems to have been conceived in the 14th century, likely as a humanization of the original bird's bill. The Tengu long noses ally them with the Shinto deity Sarathaku, who is described in the Japanese historical text Nihon Shoki with a similar idea of measuring seven head spans in length. In village festival, the two figures are often portrayed with identical red nose designs. Some of the earliest representations of the Tengu appear in the Japanese picture scrolls, such as the Tenzugashi Emaki, painted in 1296, with parody's high-ranking priest by endowing them with hawk-like beaks of Tengu demons. Tengu are often pictured as taking the shape of some sort of priest. Beginning in the 13th century, Tengu came to be associated in particular with the Yamabushi, the mountain ascetics who practiced the Shingondo. The association soon found its way into Japanese art, where the Tengu are the most frequently depicted in the Yamabushi's distinctive costume. The attire includes a small black cap, a pom-pom sash, and excuse me. Due to their aesthetic, they are often shown wielding a staff used by Buddhist monks. Tengu are commonly depicted holding magical fans made of feathers. In folk tales, these fans sometimes have the ability to grow and shrink a person's nose, but usually they also are attributed with the power to stir up great winds. Various other strange accessories may be associated with the Tengu, such as a type of tall, one-toothed Gita sandal, often called a Tengu Gita. You keeping up so far, Count
I
Panic?
am keeping up.
The term Tengu and the characters used to write it are borrowed from the name of a fierce demon from Chinese folklore called the Tiangu. Chinese literature assigns this creature a variety of descriptions, but most of them are fierce anthropomorphic canine monster that resembles a shooting star or a comet. So imagine a dog comet coming straight to Earth.
Terrifying.
It makes the noise like thunder and brings war wherever it falls. One account of the Shuyi-ji, written in 1791, it describes a dog-like Tengu with a sharp beak and upright posture, but usually the Tengu bear resembles to their Japanese counterparts. The 23rd chapter of the Nihon Shoki, written in 720, is generally held to contain the first mention of the Tengu in Japan. It is an account of a large shooting star and appears identified by a Buddhist priest as a heavenly dog. And much like the Tengu of China, its star precedes a military uprising. Although the giant Chinese characters for Tengu are used in text accompanying the phonetic characters give the reading as a heavenly fox. A writer M.W. Weiser speculated that the early Japanese Tengu may represent a combo, excuse me, combining two Chinese spirits, the Tengu and the fox spirits called the Huli Jing. How the Tengu were transformed from a dog meteor to a bird man is not clear. Some Japanese scholars have supported the theory that the Tengu image derives from the Hindu eagle deity Garuda, was pluralized in Buddhist scripture as one of the most major race of non-human beings. Like the Tengu, the Garuda are often portrayed in a human-like form with wings and a bird's beak. The name Tengu seems to be written in a place where the Garuda. Excuse me, guys. I'm like falling into the ground here, so I do
I can get you a real
hope. No,
storm.
I'm already reading.
All
I'm
right.
apologizing because I'm like, as I keep dipping down lower, I'm like, my notes are moving, staying in the same, but I'm moving. And a later version of this of a Japanese text writes the name of the Amazaku a monstrous female deity born from the god Susanos spat out of ferocious. Jeez, man, the notes are moving. With characters meaning the deity. The book describes this creature as a raging thing capable of flight, with the body of a human and the head of a beast, a long nose, long ears, and long teeth that can chew through swords. An 18th century text called the Tengu suggests that this goddess may be the true predecessor of the Tengu, but the date of the authenticity of that text and an earlier in particular remain to be actually.
Yeah.
Talked about.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts so far there, Count Pan?
Very eerie, and again, very similar. I mean, anything coming crashing down you is terrifying, but to have it take a form of such a creature is extra terrifying, Bob. So I don't know. I want to cross the crosshairs with that for sure.
Absolutely. So it's funny how the Tengu, this creature, is actually found through, you know, three different types of mythos.
Yeah.
You know, you have your India and your China and your Japan, and they kind of form their own creature based on it. The Tengu are mountain and forest goblins with both the Shinto and Buddhist attributes, and their supernatural powers include shape-shifting into a human or animal forms, the ability to speak to humans without moving their mouth, the magic of moving instantly from place to place without using their wings, and the sorcery to appear uninvited in the dreams of the living. The patron of martial arts, the bird-like Tengu, is a skilled warrior and a mischief maker, especially prone to playing tricks on the arrogant and the different people not following the Buddhist priest practices, and to punishing those who willingly misuse knowledge and authority to gain fame or possession. In bygone days, they are also inflicted their punishments on the vain and arrogant samurai warriors. They dislike braggers and those who corrupt the Dharma, or the Buddhist law. The literal meaning of Tengu is heaven and dog, as we were saying earlier. And some historical notes here. The Tengu mythology was probably introduced in Japan right around the 6th or 7th century AD in conjunction with the arrival of Buddhism from Korea and China. And as things move on, we went from, as I was saying, a literal dog meteor to a bird-like demon.
Mm-hmm.
In paintings or woodblock prints, the boar often appears instead of the Tengu or their king. So a lot of times when we look at pictures of the Tengu is usually riding a wild boar.
Okay.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Are you still there, Count Pan?
Yeah.
As I talk a little bit more, what's your take?
Well, so this is it's riding a wild boar.
Yes.
What can be more scary than a wild boar?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the Tengu has both evolved in appearance and purpose over the centuries. Originally portrayed as an evil crow-like creature after its initial change from dog.
Okay.
Crow-like creature with a man's body, a beaked face, and a small compact head, feathered wings, and heavy claws.
Terrifying.
The Tengu have since evolved into a protective bird-like man-goblin and with uncommonly long nose, wearing a small monk hat, and as we were saying, oftentimes sporting a red face. This thing then moved into the Karasa Tengu. And this was the talks of the crow, the ancient form of Tengu, or the Karasa, or the crow Tengu. And the earliest mentions of the Tengu are portrayed as an evil crow-like creature with the body of a man and is capable of kidnapping adults and children, starting fires, and ripping those who willingly damage the forest, for the Tengu lives in the trees. So it's like the Lorax, but much more dangerous.
Kind of.
Sometimes, too, the Tengu would abduct human beings only to release them later. But the lucky survivor would return home in a state of dementia, which was called the Tengu Kakushi, meaning hidden by the Tengu. Over the centuries, the Tengu became more human in appearance and takes more of a protective role in the affair of men. The Tengu can transform itself into a man, woman, or child in preferred disguises to be a barefooted, wandering, elderly mountain hermit or a monk with an extremely long nose. Both the magical tanuki or the katsune, the fox creatures, can also change to human form. And in some Japanese traditions, the two creatures are actually considered to be animal manifestations of the Tengu. So some of the yokai shapeshifters, like the tanuki or the katsune, might actually also just be Tengu that are transforming just for fun. You might be wondering why the long nose. Well, you see, Tengu are often portrayed as the mischievous sense of humor, for they love playing tricks on those they encounter, especially on pretentious and arrogant Buddhist priests and samurai. Indeed, by the late Kamakura period, the Tengu became a major literary vehicle for criticizing both established and other Buddhist people. The long nose relates to the Tengu's hatred for arrogance and prejudice. Priests with no true knowledge, prideful individuals, and those attached to fame, and those who willingly mislead or misuse the Buddhist canons are turned into long-nosed Yamabushi Tengu after their deaths. So after their death, in the living, if they were a prideful person or doing their teachings for, you know, bad things, they would come back as a Tengu with a very long nose.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a festering Pinocchio almost. So this creature, as you would die, you would come back as a very vengeful creature known as the Tengu.
Hmm.
There is the Sojobo Tengu King. In a well-known legend, hero of medieval Japan, Minamoto is trained in sword fighting by a white-haired creature known as the Tengu King, King of Mount Kurama, who befriends him. This sword fighter later becomes the great warrior of lore, helping his brother defeat the big clan and establish the area. So the Tengu goes from this very crazily dangerous figure in early times to this thing that literally teach people how to sword fight to kind of destroy things. And the Tengu is known as a kind of like a deity creature. If you go to places in Japan, they have these giant stone structures of the face of the Tengu and statues that people would go and pray and leave offerings to.
Yeah.
So this flying, dangerous creature was pretty fascinating in the very least. And actually, according to Ken Gerhard in his book, Author of Encounters with Flying Humanoids, they actually depict one of the most recent encounters of a Tengu, which is potential something that we actually see in reality. In 1952, at Camp Okubo, or near Kyoto, a U.S. Air Force private named Sinclair Taylor reported shooting at something that looked remarkably similar to one of those things. According to his testimonial, which made an appearance in the 1983 edition of Fate magazine, Taylor was standing guard one evening when he detected a sound like wings flapping. Looking up, he spotted what first took as an enormous bird hovering over him as if to attack. Taylor got the sense that the animal was leering at him with evil intent. As the bird got closer, he prepared to discharge his rifle at the imposing creature. That's when he got the fright of his life. He explains the thing, which now had started slowly to descend at him again, had the body of a man, and it was over 7 feet tall, head to toe, and its wingspan had to be as tall as its height. And he goes on to say, I started to fire and emptied my carbine where the thing hit the ground, but when I looked up to see if any of my bullets found a home, there was nothing there. And upon further investigating the incident, Taylor's superiors, officers, informed him that another guard encountered the same entity a year prior.
Just a year prior. Well, then that's too coincidental.
It makes sense though. Yeah. If the Tengu had morphed from this creature of like terrifying fright of something of protection, I mean, it might go to say that it might be something that they want to kind of defend, I guess. And maybe they saw the military as a nasty presence, which I guess it was. And the Tengu were there to either scare them off or do something.
And that would do it, I would think.
Absolutely.
They would be the ones to do that.
In the modern day, Tengu have maintained their demonic image, but they are seen both as good and bad, depending on the story. They are a big part of popular culture, appearing in anime and video games, highlighting their ongoing importance in Japanese folklore. And that, my friends, is the story of the Tengu.
I don't know. But see, the thing with that, Bob, is it seems like it's so many forms. You don't know what you're going to get with something like that. It could be anything. At the end of the day, it really could be anything. Maybe a dog comment or riding in on a wild boar. It's really the luck of draw with these creatures, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And normally when we talk about these things, I always want to talk about how to defend yourself. Yeah, but I don't have a legitimate, clear answer on how to defend yourself against this thing.
Out of luck.
They're a deity in that culture. They're a godlike entity that was literally, you know, that was being worshipped and is still being worshipped to this day.
Yeah.
You know, you see the shrines of things like the Kitsune that are there, the Tanuki shrines that people go and worship and leave offerings to. And this is no different. It's just the Tengu happens to be a martial arts master who's really good at sword work and also really knows how to use a staff. So it's like every Ninja Turtle warped into one thing that can fly and has immense strength, can teleport, and can rip you apart with its beak. And, I mean, yeah, it's changed imagery over the years to, you know, man with a nose. It's also interesting to note that most of the Tengu are actually depicted as male only. Just a fun fact. There's never a depiction of a female Tengu, to my knowledge, at least.
Well, there you go. Well, there's always, I guess, a time down the line for that, Bob. But again, you never know where you can get with something like this, it seems like. Luck of the draw.
Absolutely.
And there's no way to defeat it, so you're pretty much screwed.
Don't become an arrogant person and don't be mistreating the practices of Buddhists the Buddhist way, I guess. Because
yeah.
Then the Tengu is going to come get you. And then when you die, you're going to come back as a Tengu, but with a very long nose. You're not going to be one of the bird-like creatures. You're going to be the thing with the long nose, which isn't a good thing.
No, most certainly. Deranged Pinocchio, I think, is what you called it. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing words for our audience, folks?
Great show, Bob. Again, a great guest tonight, and I got to beat the game now. I guess I got to go with
you got to play it. It's not a beat thing. You got to run a game.
I'm going to run the game. I'm going to run the gauntlet, Bob.
Do you have friends that you're going to play with?
I'll play with you, Bob.
You can play with me anyway. All right, there we go. And folks, again, I want to apologize real quick about my notes and me kind of like going off here. Because I can't, we're doing the show live. It's really hard for me to be like, let's pause for a second. It's not like normal podcast recording where I could just click pause and be like, hey, let me fix my store live on the air. And I didn't want to have to bring Count Panic in here. So I apologize for my notes here. It's just I'm moving. And when I move, the notes stay the same and I'm losing my place.
Let's get you a real store.
Yeah, I'm literally like on the ground right now looking up at my laptop trying to see what I'm writing for the show this week.
It's sinking in more as I see ya.
Absolutely. So let's call it a night here, folks. I apologize that we didn't get enough of the lore of the week, but circumstances. Plus, we're running at an hour and a half right now. So thank you so much, Anthony DeMarco, for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate that. And to Count Panic, thank you so much for doing the show.
As always, Bob, always a pleasure for Bob After Dark. And until next week, I guess, see y'all. Take care.
To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweet dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below.
Memoriam Development.